Welcome to the Shamrock. I'm Pete Sampson at Top Notre Dame Stadium, joined by Matt Fortuna back home in Chicago. And Matt, this is a tough one to make sense of because we've been covering Notre Dame a long time. This is a game Notre Dame always found a way to win under Brian Kelly. They won 42 straight against unranked competition. Marshall upsets Notre Dame as a 20-point underdog, 26-21. The offense, very stagnant. They may have a quarterback injury to deal with moving forward. There's no run game. They couldn't tackle at the end of the game. It's a very difficult thing to process. And Marcus Freeman afterwards, when asked about, you know, where do you start, he kind of said everything, which is, I think, the most alarming answer you can give, because you can't fix everything in 1 week or 2 weeks or 3 weeks. The everything is what you needed to get done in August in spring practice and summer workouts. And here Notre Dame is sitting here 0-2, Marcus Freeman at 0-3, the first Notre Dame head coach to fall to 0-3. It's a tough place to be for a program that's ranked in the top five to begin the season and now may be unranked entirely.
They should be unranked. I mean, the loss itself is perplexing. Like, we can talk about this for the next hour and still not make a whole lot of sense of it. But what makes even less sense is, like, watching that game and looking at the postgame stats, like, Marshall was the better team. Like, it wasn't even, like, it wasn't even close. Marshall outgained them more total yards. They outrushed them 219 to 130. They averaged 5.1 yards per play, more than Notre Dame at 4.7. They won the turnover battle 3-0. I tweeted that Marshall defensive line looked like the second coming of the Steel Curtain against Notre Dame's offensive line. I mean, it was a joke. It's one of those losses that, and we can do this, I guess, because it's new coaching staff and we don't, we don't have like the body of work to rely on like we did with Brian Kelly. Whereas I'm like, I feel like this is a loss that calls everything into question. Like, they do not look like a functional operation right now on the field. They can't move the ball against Marshall. Like, that is concerning. If it's 4th and 1 and you're going for it, and you're running with your bulldozer running back and you can't get it, like, I don't know what you do. Like, it was, listen to the post game. I mean, not that you expect these guys to have answers post game, not that you expect them to like go all rah-rah and crazy, you know, right when they get to the podium with us. But, you know, it was very much like, it's working in camp. It's where, you know, Michael Mayer was very adamant. Like, we ran the ball extremely well in camp. I don't think we're that far off. It's just something we're doing on game day. I don't know if he's right. I don't know if he's wrong. Something has got to change. I mean, you talk about the honeymoon period wearing off fast. Holy cow. I mean, this is as bad as it gets as far as football-wise. I cannot wrap my arm around everything we just saw over the last 3 hours.
Yeah, great. Like I said, the grace period for Marcus Freeman would last to the next loss after Ohio State. I thought that maybe would be in November. We're here sitting here on September 10th talking about it. Yeah, I mean, it's Notre Dame sort of bring you, we, for all, and I wrote about it, and this was important to people, just about, you know, bringing back the pregame masks and walking to the stadium, and they called it the victory march. And I mean, it's just like, it just sort of turned, the day turned into ash in everyone's mouth here. You know, to get pushed around on both lines, to have really poor quarterback play across the board. You know, Drew Pine comes in at the end, throws it straight to a linebacker that is just waiting for the ball to come to him. It was brutal. It was brutal to watch. And I think that, you know, I sort of usually give players, and especially players, usually often coaches, a pass about sort of the post-game emotion and reading too much into that, because the season basically ended today in terms of what the season was supposed to be. There's still 10 games to go. There's still a lot to play for. But in terms of reaching your goal of contending for the playoff or being in the mix when the rankings come out, like, that's done. And like you said, Matt, it calls into question everything. And when everything is called into question, that is just an incredibly uncomfortable place to be. I mean, why don't we just start with the offense? Like, Notre Dame's entire offense today, the only thing that was functional were Tyler Buckler's legs and Michael Mayer's all body parts. That was it. Like, everybody else on the offense was poor. I don't think that you could point to a single player who played well other than, like, half of Tyler Buckner and all of Michael Mayer. you know, the Logan Diggs third down blitz pickup, which looked just like run on through, smash the quarterback. You know, the inability to come down with a 50-50 deep ball. You know, the Buckner pick six. The fact that, you know, as you noted, it's third and two. Audric Estime can only get one. It's fourth and one. Audric Estime can only get zero. The offensive line is incredibly poor. And as much as we sort of, I think, gave them a little bit of, I don't know, grace period during our midweek podcast with Mike Golic, like, that's done too. Now Notre Dame simply has a bad offensive line at a place that is supposed to be offensive line driven, as Marcus Freeman says.
Yeah, I mean, he reiterated that point post-game, and that's got to be the most disheartening part if you're a Notre Dame fan, and particularly a Notre Dame coach right now. I mean, you know, we overreact, especially in the heat of the moment. Like, it's easy to say, all right, they played Ohio State close for three quarters. They played this well, at least defensively, the rest of the year. They could win the rest of their games. You do the inverse of that today, and you don't see a win on the schedule. I mean, it's Navy. Right. That's it. I mean, it's not good. Like, this really is going to be a week-to-week season. And, you know, early on with the way this thing unfolded, I got a little bit of Toledo vibes from last year, because that's a game that easily could have gone the other way. And us, and I think everyone, you know, who has an opinion on Notre Dame football, spent a lot of took up a lot of oxygen around this time last year, and really throughout the first 3 or 4 weeks of last year, saying let's you know, calm down with the Marcus Freeman hype. Like, the defense coordinator hire that couldn't miss. Like, the defense was not very great at all to start last season. We're doing that on a right now with him as a head coach, and it's just a completely different level. One, because they lost the game. Two, because he's a head coach, and this is like the direction of your program moving forward. Like, it's, there's a lot of cause for concern. Like, I don't think you can overreact to this one too much. Like, it's really, it's Marshall. Like, I don't know what to, like, we even joked.
That, I mean, that could be the headline for my game story. It's Marshall.
Like, we joked on our pod this week with Golic. Like, well, it's Marshall this week, so we're not going to get too much into the weeds with previewing the game. Like, they'll win this one. I mean, you put it out there on Twitter. What most disappointing loss since when? I mean, Duke 2016 is the first one that comes to mind. I don't know if that's accurate or not.
That's what came to mind when I was down in the field. And then one of our colleagues, Tim Priester, was like, that team was bad. So, like, that doesn't
count. So was Duke that year. Duke didn't even make a bowl that year.
They had a first-round pick at quarterback. But, I mean,
don't
I would
remind
probably
me.
Go back to Tulsa, because that's probably as low as you can get. And just sort of backslide this far, this fast, it really makes your head spin if you're following Notre Dame, either as a reporter or a fan or just an unbiased observer. Like, it is hard to get your head around how a team with this many, you know, returning veterans, good leadership, NFL tight end, dual threat quarterback who hasn't played but has a lot of ability, some decent young receivers, should be a great defensive line. Very talented linebackers, a secondary that surprised all of us, I think, last right. week. You know, and suddenly you can't defend the wide run play at all. Just a really poor effort across the board. I don't, you know, like you said, Notre Dame went from being the most proven commodity in college football, which I think was actually frustrating for Notre Dame fans, right? Because you knew that you would win this game 31-21. And then you win next week's 27-17. But you knew you were going to win, even if you didn't enjoy the show. Now you don't know what you're going to get anymore from Notre Dame after today. Everything is up for grabs the rest of the season, which is just an incredibly alarming place to be for a program that had turned itself into kind of a serial winner with a ceiling over the last 5 years.
It is, because they lost. Like, if they pulled this one out of their you-know-what at the end, and look, they had the ball down four with, what was it, 4.5 minutes left before the pick six. You know, it's okay. Like, the narrative is just different, right? It's, all right, you got the first one to your belt. Now you can breathe easy. You can move forward. You're playing more free. Like, what, you know, last year, Toledo. I saw Drew Tranquil tweet about, was it Ball State? And I think Vanderbilt in 2018. And games they probably should have lost, they didn't lose, and they ended up going to the playoff that year. Like, but they never, like, they've played with fire before, but they haven't gotten burnt until today. And they got burnt in a big way. I mean, you know, Marshall had some good players. The running back from Florida State had a hell of a game, but, like, again, he's not, there's a reason he's at Marshall. There's a reason he was at JUCO last year. it's, you know, watching the game, I'm not sure the stats tell the whole story. I mean, look at it now. Notre Dame actually had one more sack than Marshall, 3-2. They had more TFLs, 8-3. It felt like Marshall's defensive line made more of an impact on this game than Notre Dame's defensive line did. I'm not sure that that's fully conveyed by the numbers here, but it just was not like an inspiring performance. I mean, once again, last week, Notre Dame gets the ball back with a few seconds left right before halftime. They take a deep shot to Lindsey. He runs the wrong route. You say, okay, we're going to get out of here with the lead and you know, take what we can take what the defense gives us. They had it today, and Buckner missed him. And that changes everything. You go into halftime with a lead after a rough half. Tyler Buckner, young quarterback, goes into halftime with some confidence. Like, there was nothing inspiring about watching this team play. Like, even as, you know, they're driving to potentially take the lead, and, like, you think they're going to win because it's Notre Dame against Marshall, and your brain is conditioned to know that Notre Dame should beat Marshall in football. But nothing that played out over the previous 50 minutes or so inspired faith that Notre Dame was going to get it done. And the other really disappointing part, I mean, we're talking a lot about the offensive line and the quarterback, and Marcus Freeman, to his credit, said this, like, we can be a great defense, but it doesn't matter if we don't step up when it matters most. I mean, for Marshall to march down the field and get that go-ahead touchdown drive the way they did, like, that's just, like, directly to the heart of this program. Like, that cannot happen. Like, I don't know how you allow that to happen if you're Notre Dame's defense.
No, it's pretty brutal. And I think that, you know, it's bizarre to watch some, this is like way in the weeds and I apologize, but like some of the like rotational stuff, like who's in the game when it really matters. You know, from the press box, it seems like they rotate a lot regardless of game situation. And you know, to Al Golden's credit, on one of them worked. There was a third down where I was like, why is Isaiah Foskey subbing out? And who gets the sack? Justin Adebayola, who was sort of playing in his position. So it does work sometimes, but there is a serious lack of dudes on defense playing like it. You know, Brandon Joseph has really good ball skills, but was known as a very poor tackler at Northwestern. Yeah. And he missed a big one today on the very long run, the 42-yarder that set Marshall up for the game-winning, what I guess proved to be the go-ahead touchdown. So they're very, very difficult to sort of wrap your head around how, just like physically, like you should be able to play fairly poorly and beat Marshall, in my opinion,
right?
Especially on defense. I think even on offense, like you should be able to just move people off the ball. Freaking Notre Dame with old Fisher, you know, allegedly healthy Patterson. And they could not do that at all today. It's, I think that might, in a afternoon of things that are alarming, the fact that both lines lost the line of scrimmage probably has to be number one.
It's got to be. And when we talk about known commodities, Brian Kelly or no Brian Kelly, with Notre Dame football, it's offensive line and defensive line. And when you're the better team going into the game on both sides of the trenches there, you're probably going to win, barring massive screw-ups. And the thing today was, obviously, there was a pick six. There was another pick late that basically sealed it. This didn't seem fluky at all by Marshall. You know what I mean? Like, it wasn't like...
Yeah, it wasn't like a block punt for Marshall or like a, you know, quirky bounce off a guy's helmet on 3rd and 20 that turns into a 25-yard gain. Like, there's really nothing like that.
No, not at all.
They just got beat on the lines.
A&M, by the way, lost to App State as far as, like, sky is falling places that had major off seasons and coaches taking victory laps. I don't know how that one played out, but I imagine it was similar to this one and the response will be similar, or probably worse down there. But it was a wacky day of college football, that's for sure. Texas is almost back and Notre Dame's gone. Like, it's been a wild noon and 3:30 window so far. I thought we'd spend most of this podcast like talking about win number one and the homecoming and evaluating the new NBC broadcast crew, which we'll have thoughts on later, but it was like, it's very, very alarming. Like, don't know much about Cal. Gonna have to study them a lot more than I did Marshall. Notre Dame's gonna have to study them a lot more than they did Marshall. This is a season where everything is going to be week to week. Like, it's, I don't know how you can play so inspired defensively against probably the best offense in the country 7 days ago and come out and just get destroyed on the most critical drive of the game by Marshall. Like, that does not make sense to me.
No, no, it's impossible to reconcile some of the things that happened today with, like, this is Notre Dame, right? That was a big one, you know, and there are bits and pieces. Like, Michael Mayer obviously is a stud. 8 catches for 103 yards and a touchdown. I think Tariq Bracey's senior, like, Tariq Bracey is the nickelback and leads the team in TFLs. Like, that's not how that's supposed to work, but dang it, like, Tariq Bracey is a really, really good football player. But the fact that, like, other guys have not come along for that. Like, Isaiah Foskey got a sack for today, but I don't think we saw a ton of him. You know, Jason Adamalola, for some of the preseason bluster, has not really, like, been a dude that looks like, okay, this is a future pro so far this season. It's I mean, I'll put this to you. Like, what has been more shocking to you? The fact that the offensive line has not delivered, or the fact that the defensive line, when they've actually needed it, has sort of let the group down?
They're both disappointing. I'd say the offensive line's more disappointing. Obviously, me, you, and a lot of others completely misevaluated the instant impact return of Harry Hiestand and 2, we thought, first-round tackles, and Jarrett Patterson made all these starts back. Like, it just has not clicked. I would say they're more disappointing because, despite not getting home to C.J. Stroud last week, the defense played pretty well. They held Ohio State to its lowest point total of the Ryan Day era. Like, if you told me going into Ohio State's only going to score 21 points, I'd give Notre Dame a decent shot at winning that game. And they had a decent shot at winning that game in the second half. Whereas this one, if you can't rely on your offensive line in third and fourth and short against Marshall, like, I mean, if you're running Tyler Buchner more than anyone on that roster right now, 13 carries to lead the team, you know, it almost feels like you know, that Oklahoma State bowl game in the second half, where they're down at receiver, they're going to throw their ways out of situation, they're just going to basically abort the run because it hadn't worked all season and they didn't want to try it that game. It feels a little bit like that with a less proven quarterback. Like, Jack Cohn was capable of airing it out and making plays with his arm, even if he wasn't with his leg. Tyler Buchner has not shown the ability to do that yet. And they're trying to get him involved in other ways, and they're running him more, and he's running more himself. But it feels like the issues, at least offensively, are very similar to what they were when we last saw this team in action in 2021.
Yeah, it's that's part of it. I think that Reese has some very hard questions to ask himself, because this offense is not what he thought it was going to be. They have, like I said, those 2 commodities. One of them may be out with the shoulder injury, and then it's just Mayer. You know, Drew Pine certainly. I think it would be hard to argue that he looked like he was.
No, I mean, even when he comes in, you're like, all right, maybe something, right? Just provide a spark the way he did in the Cincy game.
There's no spark.
And there wasn't. No.
Yeah, there was no spark there at all. And I think I wonder if Notre Dame can dig itself out of this hole by accepting who it is and who it is not offensively. It is not, this cannot be a pass first offense right now. The receivers are not good enough and the quarterback's not good enough. I don't know if it can be a run first offense either with the running backs and the offensive line. It can be a scramble first offense. And I realize no one wants to call that game. No one wants to put your name on that if you're an offensive coordinator, but I really don't know what else Reese can do right now, because they just look so far away from being like a functioning offense right now. And this is supposed to be a time where, you know, Reese has more of his fingerprints on it. You know, he has a little bit more autonomy. And I mean, he's got to be asking himself some hard questions. Marcus Freeman has got to be asking Reese some hard questions. I don't know what the answers are going to be, other than we just got to scramble around and hope Michael Mayer gets open until proven otherwise. Like, Lorenzo Styles has a ton of ability, but that's kind of it. There's just not a lot of extra stuff out there that I could see, like, oh yeah, this is a guy who could develop. This is a guy who can come along. Something is going to happen. Have to happen. That we don't see coming, I feel like, for the offense to turn it around.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they were going to dink and dunk their way to a win down 19-15 by just dumping it off to Mayer the whole time, which usually works against inferior opponents, even if they know it's coming. Obviously, that wasn't the case, but there's no identity right now with this offense. I mean, it was you'll get a chance to watch it later. Like NBC had cameras in the coach's box like they usually do, but they showed a number of like Reese facial reactions to the overthrow on Lindsay and a couple other near big plays. And like, it was funny and cute in the context of like, well, it's Marshall, like they should be winning by more.
They'll come back and win.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
right.
That's not the case right now. Iowa just missed a field goal to lose the game against Iowa State. Talk about a team with offensive identity challenges. sorry, it's been an awesome week of college football as far as chaos.
Drunk sport this
is. Who do you think had more fun? Notre Dame fans watching LSU Sunday night or LSU fans watching Notre Dame today? Who's Marshall?
I think it was Notre Dame fans watching LSU lose, because I don't think that LSU fans have a whole lot of like antipathy towards Notre Dame in general.
Yeah.
But I think the feelings toward Baton Rouge from South Bend were much more pronounced. But now that's, again, it's just like what this season was supposed to be, it's impossible for that to happen now. And I don't, that is just a hard thing to get your head around and then flush if you're Marcus Freeman and this entire football program, because like he was not brought in to just sort of do what Brian Kelly did. He was brought in to elevate it. And yes, I've talked about this and written about this. He needed time to grow into being a head coach. But this was not sort of a lesson that I thought he was going to have to work through live with everyone watching. I thought that he would be farther along as a head coach at this point, in terms of being able to steer a program. And look, maybe at the end of November, we'll be having a much different podcast and we'll say that he learned some very tough lessons about getting involved in some things and staying out of others after Saturday against Marshall. I don't know, but it is very alarming that if you're Notre Dame, you're like, well, every game is up for grabs from here to the end of the season. And that's, I mean, I think you and I probably looked at the schedule of being like, all right, Ohio State, BYU, Clemson, USC.
Sure.
The other eight games have to be wins and should be wins. And when you lose to Marshall, suddenly it's all 12 are up for grabs instead of just four. And that's just really uncomfortable.
That was what I was going to say next. I mean, even as recently as this past week after the season opening loss, I think the mindset that a lot of us had was, all right, like that BYU game, like because you already got one loss under your belt, like that becomes a little more interesting. Now, if Brian Kelly was coaching, I feel a little bit better about it, because that guy knew how to, however he did it, he knew how to win the games that were 50-50 or that Notre Dame was a slight favorite in. But like now, like, yeah, I mean, we'll see how Stanford does against USC tonight. I mean, I don't know. I don't think they're all that great this year, but we'll see if they give USC a game. You know, that changes things. UNLV, there's one. The one I had preseason that I just thought was going to be really tricky because they never really play there and it's always a tough place to play is Syracuse on October 29th at the Carry Dome, a week before Clemson. We saw what Syracuse did to a Louisville team that actually didn't look as bad as we thought they did by winning at UCF last night. And we can overanalyze this all we want, but like outside of UNLV and Navy right now,
and
we will. I mean, it's week two. What else do we do other than overreact? But UNLV and Navy are the two ones, the only two ones where I'm not like, all right, how are they going to game their way to victory in this one? Like, that's the position you put yourselves in when you lose to Marshall and lose to Marshall in the fashion that you did it.
I want to alert you to something. With 2:46 to go in the fourth quarter, Cal is up 20-14 on UNLV. So, we're living in weird times, Matt Fortuna. Very, very weird times.
Very weird times.
Everything is possible. Like this is like upside down. We're on the underside of Hawkins, Indiana, right now. Stuff just doesn't make any sense anymore. I don't even know what to believe.
Notre Dame and LSU are combined 0-5 since changing coaches. LSU plays the Southern Jaguars of the FCS in 10 minutes. So,
don't rule anything out.
Yeah, I wouldn't rule anything out. Seriously, the way they lost that one and with what we've seen from Notre Dame so far, everything is up for grabs right now. But, man, it's, yeah, I won't go so far as to say you don't know what you got till it's gone, because I think most logical, smart Notre Dame fans, if you put away the exit and everything that transpired, are able to put themselves back into their like 2010 version of themselves and think, can we ever be good again? Not, can we win a championship instead of competing for a championship? But like, man, like this, like today, like it was just, it was just weird. I mean, I just, the way it happened, the way it unfolded in those last 10 minutes or so, it just did not feel like Notre Dame football to me. Like it just, there was nothing inspiring about it. Like it was, again, it was cute for like a half, like, all right, first home game, jitters, sold out crowd, yada, yada, yada. And look, credit to Charles Huff and Marshall. Charles Huff is a really good coach. Learned under Saban, among many others. He knew he'd have his team ready, just didn't think his team would be nearly good enough to do what they did today. But
No, yeah, you're right. I mean, you got to give a lot of credit to Charles Huff. The game plan to stretch Notre Dame horizontally. I like Notre Dame's linebackers a lot, but like playing in space sideline to sideline, with the exception of, Jack Kaiser, was not great. I thought Notre Dame's safety plays, or that Ramon Henderson got caught, not sure where to look. Brandon Joseph missed a big tackle. It was the safety position came back to earth in a huge, huge way today. And I just don't. Marshall caught Notre Dame in some bad spots, and then Notre Dame made compounded the errors, whether it be missed tackles or missed assignments or not sure what they're seeing. So it was a very difficult. We should. I don't want to speculate on what's for next for Tyler
Right.
Buckner, but if he's out, how does that change what you view Notre Dame can still be if Drew Pine is suddenly your starting quarterback?
I don't mean to be reactionary. I don't think it changes much as far as perception, because it's not like Tyler Buckner has shown he's a difference maker yet. Now, could he be down the line? Sure. That's what Notre Dame's hoping he can be. That's why they named him the starter. But I don't look at this as like, oh my God, they lost the game and they may have lost their starting quarterback. Like, Pine wasn't inspiring in his limited action today, but
Did this pick up on the broadcast when Buckner went out and Pine came in? Like, there was a very rousing cheer for Drew
It
Pine
felt
coming
that
into the
way.
game.
Like, I wasn't sure if I was hearing things, and you
Okay.
can never really tell, but
No, you were hearing that correctly.
so it doesn't change like my doesn't change my short-term outlook. I don't know if it changed my long-term outlook right now. Maybe if this was 2 weeks ago, it would have. But here's my question back at you for that. If Buckner can play Saturday, but he's not 100%, how useful is that if you've been using him to run most of the
Yeah,
time?
I mean, that's what is incredibly alarming to me. It's like, all right, well, what does Notre Dame's offense look like with a quarterback who can't run? Because that's the entire run game
Right.
right now. That's not a good place to be.
And I think
They're already in a bad place.
Pine can move fine.
Fine, but he is much, much less mobile than Buckner.
Well,
He's less mobile than Ian Book to me. I mean,
you're not calling designed runs for him, but I think like when the pocket breaks down, he's capable of scrambling and getting positive yardage out of bad
Could
situations.
be, yeah. That's a little more like Book-ish. But I still don't think he's quite that athletic. He's a short, undersized quarterback. I don't. It's with everything else that they have to figure out, the idea of being forced into a situation where you have to move to a different quarterback is, that should be terrifying. Because like for where Buckner is or is not, you can at least see some things where, like, okay, you can build on that, or like you sort of get that in order. There can be something good. Like, if he develops over here, like, that could be something. But with Drew Pine, I think you just, man, you lower the ceiling on what the season can be, just because he's a mobile quarterback behind the line, but is not going to sort of wow you physically in any way, the way that Buckner does, at least with his legs. So it's tough. I don't know. It'd be interesting to sort of see what, if they know they don't have Buckner next week, does Pine look totally different because he has a whole week to prepare to start? Which, like, I think he never started last year. For how much he played and how much we talked about him, he never started a game. He's never been in a position to start a game, to prepare an entire week as a starter, to get all of those reps. So if that's a place that Notre Dame has to go, I don't know. Maybe Drew Pine can be more than what we've sort of seen in these spot reliefs, where, it's a spark, but it's a fleeting spark. Can he be a guy that leads you for an entire game? I don't know the answer to that. I feel like I'm grasping at straws at this
Sure.
point, but it's at least a conversation that I think we should have. Like, what if this is the reality that Notre Dame's living in? That, like, how does that sort of change
Well,
things?
and because of the timing of this too, right? Like, my mind immediately went to the last time there was a new Notre Dame coach and he had a first season and he had a supposedly star quarterback go down and Tommy Rees comes in and is limiting what he can do physically but leads him to an undefeated record as a starter and loses a job but gets it back next year. We all know the history there. Like, in some ways, like, if this was later in the year, it's like, all right, again, we don't know what happened with Tyler Buchner. We don't know what his prognosis is. But, like, if it's later in the year and we know more about this football team, it's easier to say, hey, Drew Pine, go run the offense for the next three or four games or however many games are left. Go out there and win us some games. This team doesn't have an identity offensively right now, nor do they know, frankly, if their starter's any good because he hasn't proven to be so far. So Pine comes in and, you know, they adjust the offense accordingly with different quarterbacks, but if he comes in and looks great, does that become a season-long issue, if you will? You know, if he comes out and...
I think if a quarterback comes in and looks great, that's not a season-long issue. That's maybe a potential season-long solution.
Not issue. Issue is probably the wrong word. Their storyline. Like, that's going to be something that'll be talked about every single day till the season's over. Again, if it comes with a win, you take it if you're Notre Dame. But it's like one more layer of complications on top of what's already been an awfully complicated start to the Marcus Freeman era.
I mean, that gets back to the first thing I said on the show when it's everything. And like, I'm expanding my arms very wide to encompass like the entire, all of Notre Dame Stadium in Michiana. Like when it's everything, that is a very, very difficult place to be. Cause you just can't fix everything in a week. You might not be able to fix everything in a year. And you know, I take some of the commentary post game at face value, some I don't, about in camp things look good. In camp, we thought, like, I don't know the answer to that. We only saw two full practices. There were a couple good things that the offense showed along the way. I felt like they were going to be much farther along than they are, obviously. But I don't know what camp looked like. I think one of the things that kind of my antenna went up a little bit post-game was just about, like, the physical practices and how they really have to get after it and how they have to grind. Like, I'm not sure if like going out and hitting all week is the way to go right now. It just seems like they're going to have to like pivot a little bit in terms of accepting who they are opposed to leaning into who they want to be. And I don't know if that's going to work against Cal or UNC or BYU or Stanford. I have no clue at this point, but I think just sort of hoping that both lines are going to rise to the occasion and you can be a run first team. Like, it may be weeks before Notre Dame gets there. Cause I mean, right now you're looking at the Logan Diggs, 7 carries, 7 yards, Chris Tyree, 3 carries, 17 yards, Audric Estime, 10 carries, 33 yards. Like they're not close at running back right now. And I went through the stats last week about sort of rush efficiency, which is basically, are you staying ahead of the chains? Can you get 40% of the yards necessary on first down, 60% on second down, and 100% on third down? It was probably the worst rush efficiency performance I have seen in a long, long time by a Notre Dame team. And this one, from the running backs at least, may be right there too. So it... whatever Notre Dame's identity is, whatever they want it to be, they're not there. Whatever it is, I think they may have to sort of come to terms with that and try to make the best of a situation that clearly they did not think they were going to be in. But they are. So they have to deal with it. They have to live in this space. And they got to move forward.
There's no basis for comparison right now. Even 2011, like when they started 0-2, the last time they started 0-2, Brian Kelly went live that week. They beat a damn good Michigan State team very thoroughly. You knew what that team was capable of because you knew the talent on hand. That was a more talented team, in my opinion, than a team a year later that ended up making the BCS title game. But that was a team that turned the ball over 10 times and lost 2 games in just like crazy fashion. Like, they were the better team in both games. They lost. We just need to be more disciplined. Now, to your point, don't know if there's like scheming your way out of this, hitting your way out of this, practicing your way out of this. There are issues that need to be identified on both sides of the ball, and I don't know what the timeline is for figuring out those issues and implementing them on game day, because it ain't working right now.
No, it's gonna be a tough film session for not only the roster, but I think the coaching staff. And that's like when you go back to 2011, for what Brian Kelly's faults were or were not, I think we still were like, okay, this guy will figure it out because he has a track record of figuring stuff out. Marcus Freeman does not. No coach who, and you know, this place chews up first year coaches. That has been chronicled since the beginning of time. Marcus Freeman is a first year coach currently getting chewed up. So how does he stop that process and reverse it? I don't know. It's tough to come back from a loss from this, because this is kind of one of the things that like lingers from here until however long he's coaching at Notre Dame. The fact that they started 0-2, maybe it will be formative in a good way. Maybe it'll be an albatross in a bad way. I have no idea. But sort of like both things are in play right now, which is, man, I did not see this coming in a million years. I predict Notre Dame to win 42-13 today.
No, you and me both. I mean, I think that puts a bow on it now. We're going to have a lot more talking to do this week, and fortunately or unfortunately, the rest of the season, if things keep up this way, it's definitely more interesting. That we knew it would be interesting. We knew it would be a new era. We did not think it would be interesting in this kind of negative regard so far, but that's the position Notre Dame finds itself in right now. 0-2, a home loss to Marshall. Pete, that's all I got. You got anything else from the stadium?
Yeah, man, I got nothing. I'm about to be kicked out of this press box since we're almost an hour after the interviews ended. So that I think maybe we'll put a bow on this episode of the Shamrock. A unexpected bit of talking points for us here. Me and Notre Dame Stadium, you for back home. But yeah, it's going to be a very interesting week. And the season was always going to be interesting. It's just going to be interesting in a completely different way now. So on that note, we'll wrap up here. I'm going to get out of here. I got to get to writing. He's Matt in Chicago. I'm Pete, the Tap Notre Dame Stadium. You've been listening to the latest episode of the Shamrock after Marshall's 26-21 upset of Notre Dame in Marcus Freeman's home debut.